Digging deeper with Money Control, a Money Control exclusive.
NPAs have been in the news regularly for a while now, and there's been a fair bit of doomsaying around them of late. Ever since the Nirav Modi Punjab National Bank fraud became public knowledge, the central government seems keen to be perceived as being on a war footing against NPAs. There's a constant stream of news on non-performing assets of banks. Massive numbers, thousands of crores of rupees, are reported to the point where NPAs probably deserve their own segment in business news. They'll be more interesting than weather forecasts for sure. So on Digging Deeper with Money Control, the podcast that's all about getting to the bottom of things, let's deconstruct this NPA business and try to understand what's going on. Welcome.
The War on NPAs.
An NPA, or a non-performing asset, is a way of classifying loans or advances that are in default or are in arrears on scheduled payments of principal or interest, meaning the principal or interest payment remained overdue, generally for a period of 90 days. Banks consider loans that they have given as assets. An asset is classed as non-performing when it doesn't generate income for the lender anymore. The total amount of such bad loans across the banking sector, what's known as gross NPA, was estimated to be around 8.4 lakh crore rupees in December. This number is expected to hit a peak of 11 lakh crores when updated figures are released later. The Hindu reported in February this year that in March 2017, public sector banks accounted for 6.8 lakh crore of the 7.9 lakh crore bad loans. Private sector banks held 91,900 crore and foreign banks the rest. In December, it claimed, and we quote from that article, stressed assets held by Indian banks amount to around 10 lakh crore rupees or $150 billion, roughly twice the GDP of Sri Lanka, unquote. Estimates suggest that PSBs accounted for over 88% of the total gross NPAs in December. These NPAs account for 12% of all banking loans in the country. Now that we have some idea of the magnitude of the problem, let's take a closer look. Gross NPAs in Indian banking have swelled 135% between December 2014, when they were at 2.61 lakh crores, and December 2016, when they stood at 6.97 lakh crores. By March 2017, the average bad loans of PSBs were about 75% of their net worth. Around this time last year, the situation was already dire. For every 100 rupees that they lent out, Indian banks were likely to get back less than 90 rupees. Some analysts claim that the trouble began with the crisis of 2008. Remember the collapse of Lehman Brothers and all those documentaries you watched which tried to explain the crash? Well, that's when things started to go bad. Terrible year, 2008. Anyway, the Indian economy was chugging away at a healthy pace. Between 2006 and then, it had grown at around 9 to 9.5%. So, many companies borrowed aggressively for their expansion plans. When the slowdown happened in 2008, it wreaked havoc on these companies' repayment abilities. Banks have become cautious since then. Loan growth now hovers around 3%. It is believed that the top 10 business group borrowers have to repay around 5 lakh crore rupees to banks. To give a famous or notorious example, consider Kingfisher Airlines. As the Indian government closed in on him for not paying his loans, Mr. Mallya quickly relocated to England. That was in 2016. Last month, the National Stock Exchange decided to delist the airline. Government authorities are cracking down on shell companies, listed as well as unlisted, for being allegedly used as conduits for illicit fund flows. After the delisting, Mallya will not be able to tap Indian stock markets for funds for any future business ventures for 10 years, that's 2028, when he will be 72 years old. Additionally, he will be liable for any repayments ordered. To sum up that infamous case, 6 years after the company went belly up, accumulating a debt of 9,000 crores, his company has been delisted and he is barred from trading on the stock markets for 10 years. Those 9,000 crores are now non-performing assets for any major Indian bank like SBI, IDBI, etc. The State Bank of India had lent Vijay Mallya's airlines over 1,400 crore rupees. The loans given out to Kingfisher Airlines were classed as an NPA by the State Bank of India back in 2012. What of the Reserve Bank, one might ask? Surely it must be doing something to address the issue. Well, it has been trying, but no real results have manifested as of this time of bringing you this podcast. In February 2014, it introduced the Joint Lenders Forum, or JLF. This allowed banks, which had disbursed loans to specific companies, to consider a collective mechanism to resolve the problem. Predictably, the banks didn't agree on much and the expected recoveries remained elusive. So, the RBI introduced a strategic debt restructuring scheme in June of 2015. Some analysts are of the opinion that it was merely old wine in a new bottle, a new version of the failed corporate debt restructuring scheme from 2001. It allowed banks to buy a stake in defaulting companies by converting debt into equity. The plan saw no takers because banks were dependent on promoters for the plan's resolution, and there were no buyers for such equity. In 2016, the RBI pushed for sustainable structuring of stressed assets. This allowed banks to restructure large loans where the projects were up and running. As it was applicable only to active projects, it met with limited success, if at all. Bankers reportedly told the media that the RBI's measures were falling short because the slump at the ground level was not reflected in India's GDP. We quote N.S. Venkatesh, executive director at Lakshmi Vilas Bank, a private lender. These are his words. Bad loans are a culmination of the economy's slowing down, stalled projects and licenses of players from some industries being called off. Unquote. Finally, 1 year ago, the RBI prepared a list of the Dirty Dozen, 12 companies that were the largest borrowers, accounting for 25% of all the bad loans in the country. The central bank demanded that this Dirty Dozen be immediately taken to bankruptcy courts. Which brings us to the big ticket move by the government to tackle the NPA problem, IBC. The Insolvency and Bankruptcy Code, what the Economic Times called the biggest economic reform in India after GST, is a rare instance of efficient implementation of a new law. Authorities claimed that the law would extract the highest possible value from an asset within a specific time. Its selling point was the 180-day timeline, extendable to 270 days, within which the resolution plan is to be approved. The Insolvency and Bankruptcy Code 2016 was implemented through an Act of Parliament. It received presidential assent in May last year and was put into use as quickly as August 2017. The IBC has become a centerpiece in the government's war on NPAs. So, how does it help? Firstly, IBC highlights insolvency processes for individuals, companies, and partnership firms. Both debtors and creditors can start recovery proceedings against each other. Second, as mentioned earlier, businesses must complete the insolvency exercise within 180 days under this new code. The deadline can be extended if creditors do not object to the extension. Third, smaller companies, this includes startups with an annual turnover of 1 crore, the insolvency exercise must be completed in 90 days with a provision for extension of deadline by 45 days. Fourth, IBC permits the hiring of services of licensed professionals who have total control over the assets of the debtor while the proceedings are on at a tribunal. Five, two tribunals have been authorized to resolve insolvency issues and pronounce judgment. For businesses, it is the NCLT or National Company Law Tribunal. In the case of individuals, the authorized tribunal is the Debt Recovery Tribunal. Before the IBC, reorganizing and or winding up a business was subject to discrete laws. There was no assurance that the debt could be recovered under the then prevalent laws such as the Contract Act, Recovery of Debt Dues to Banks and Financial Institutions Act 1993, Securitization and Reconstruction of Financial Assets and Enforcement of Security Interest Act 2002. Mouthful. But yes, the organization's recast under the SICA or Sikh Industrial Companies Act or winding up under the Companies Act 1956 was usually not successful. Further, laws dealing with individual insolvency were outdated, dating back nearly 100 years. The process of recovery in India was usually rather protracted, sometimes even taking 15 years. On average, India takes 4 years to declare a promoter or a company insolvent, which is more than twice the time taken in China or the United States, according to World Bank data. Consequently, Indian banks recover a mere 25 cents to a dollar in India, compared to 36 cents in China and 80 cents in the US. Under the IBC, insolvency proceedings can be initiated even with a default of above 1 lakh rupees based on the payment default. The new structure under the IBC allows a time-bound resolution of insolvency and gives genuine business failures a second chance. Under the new consolidated bankruptcy law, control shifts from shareholders or promoters to a committee of creditors. The process under the new code rests on four pillars: insolvency professionals, information utilities, adjudication, and regulation. Insolvency professionals now have a significant role to play in the bankruptcy process. They will be regulated by insolvency professional agencies. Information utilities will electronically store data about lenders. The National E-Government Services Limited, or NESL, is the first registered IU or information utility. Adjudication will be the responsibility of the NCLT or the National Company Law Tribunal in cases of business insolvency. Debt recovery tribunals will oversee bankruptcy cases of individuals and unlimited liability partnerships. The requisite appellate authorities have also been put in place: NCLAT and DRAT. A regulator, the Insolvency Bankruptcy Board of India, IBBI, will be the central agency at the top of this chain. The Dirty Dozen identified by the RBI, who account for approximately 2.7 lakh crores worth of NPAs, will be sent to the IBC for resolution. And while reservation remains about the speed of change and the long-term success of this law, it has received applause, even if restrained, for some early successes. First big bankruptcy success hands $5.2 billion to India lenders, went a Bloomberg headline. Tata Steel bought insolvent Bhushan Steel and will pay $5.2 billion, or approximately 35,000 crores, to Bhushan Steel's creditors. This is about 63% of the 56,000 crore rupees claimed by a consortium including SBI and PNB, the two biggest government-run lenders in India and the insolvent company's largest creditors. Banks provisioned for a discount on the outstanding debt of more than 50%, according to Ravikant Bhatt, an analyst at MK Global Financial Services Limited. He spoke to Bloomberg and we quote him: "The successful resolution of Bhushan is a positive structural development for the banking sector." Interim Finance Minister Piyush Goyal, standing in for Arun Jaitley, who's on sick leave, tweeted, and we read out, "The non-performing asset resolution process is being done through a fair and transparent insolvency and bankruptcy code, helping boost both the banking sector and the economy." Unquote. While analysts and experts agree that the IBC is a game changer, they point that it is prone to the usual delays that haunt the Indian industry. For instance, a day after the NCLT approved Tata Steel's resolution plan for Bhushan Steel, an aggrieved promoter of the debt-laden firm reportedly moved the appellate tribunal, challenging the NCLT order, meaning an uncertainty is still hanging over Bhushan Steel. Another instance is the Electrosteel insolvency proceedings. The Kolkata bench of the National Company Law Appellate Tribunal, or NCLT, had approved a resolution plan from Vedanta for Electrosteel Steels Limited, endorsing the view of the Committee of Creditors. The creditors had approved the bid of Vedanta on March 29, 2018. Then the NCLAT, which hears appeals, admitted a petition by Renaissance Steel challenging the eligibility of Vedanta in the Electrosteel Steels insolvency process. This case is now being heard in the NCLAT board and the resolution remains in effect incomplete. So, the IBC, while a big step forward, still has a few loopholes that need to be plugged. There is another development with the IBC coming into effect. It's luring offshore investors who have expressed an interest in buying the bad loans. CDPQ, a Canadian pension fund manager, has made $600 million available to the Edelweiss Group for investing in such assets. A Hong Kong firm, SSG Capital Management Limited, sees opportunities in such assets, and foreign funds including Oaktree Capital Group and Varde Partners seem keen on participating in this nascent market. One analyst noted that foreign funds see significant value in problem assets and are willing to bring in management and expertise to run the distressed companies. SSG Capital Management, which oversees more than $4 billion, has deployed a significant amount of capital in India, according to its chief investment officer, Edwin Wong. The sale of distressed assets from banks to third-party investors went up in the last fiscal, according to SC Lowy Financial of Hong Kong. An expert from the firm said, and we quote, "We've seen an increase in fund managers pivoting their efforts from other jurisdictions towards India," unquote. Most of the big lenders, including ICICI Bank and SBI, are keen on selling parts of their bad loan portfolios to asset reconstruction companies in the coming weeks instead of waiting for the resolutions as per the Economic Times. Seven banks, including IDBI Bank, are in the process of selling outstanding loans worth approximately 28,000 crore rupees. The largest share of such bad loans belongs to IDBI, which has identified 30 accounts worth 21,399 crores in unpaid dues. IDBI has total bad loans that make up 28% of its loan book, the highest in the banking sector. The trigger for the sale is the loophole allowing for unending litigation under the IBC, as well as a desire to restrict their share of bad loans under 6%, the mark at which the Reserve Bank of India will initiate corrective action. Estimates indicate this ratio had swelled to 13.5% in the fourth quarter. As of the 23rd of May 2018, 26 private banks and public sector banks reported gross non-performing assets in excess of 7.3 lakh crores, with PSBs adding an additional 1 lakh crore to their share in the Jan to March quarter this year. We discussed recently the Centre's recapitalization plan for PSBs. However, losses reported by these banks have nearly wiped out all of the 13 billion capital infusion by the government. Worse, ratings agency Fitch announced that the situation is unlikely to improve in the current fiscal. 19 of the 21 state-run banks reported losses for the fiscal, including SBI. Even resilient private sector banks were not immune, with Axis Bank reporting its first quarterly loss. The $11 billion in capital committed by the government for FY19 will help banks avoid breaching regulatory triggers, but more government capital is required to stabilize balance sheets, meet regulatory requirements, and support growth, according to Fitch. Ultimately, the impression that one gets is that the government seems to be working on a cleanup while holding the banks accountable. A senior official told the media that the government is aiming to make bankers take responsibility for their lending decisions. The senior official in Mint said, and we quote this official, "There has to be some accountability. Bankers have to know details of all their big accounts and act when there are instances of deliberate fraud," unquote. He also added, "Bankers now know that they cannot any longer hide NPA accounts by providing fresh loans to defaulters."
Digging deeper with Money Control, a Money Control exclusive.